Hello and welcome to Just a Walk in the Sun, a monthly podcast from the Herefordshire Light Infantry Museum. I'm the Reverend Paul Roberts, and I'm joined by our curator, Colonel Andy Taylor.
Thank you for that introduction, Paul, and we're almost on your home turf today, aren't we? We're in St. Peter's Church in Bromyard.
Yes, I do feel very much at home in a church building with my day job as it is, though this isn't one of my churches, I hasten to add.
But they're all churches together, I think.
They are, yeah. Absolutely.
But here we are in the church, and it's a lovely church. We're wandering around having a look at everything. Paul's obviously looking at everything except what he's supposed to be looking at, because we're here to look at the Bromyard First World War Memorial.
That's right. We're used to war memorials being in churches, often plaques on walls and that sort of thing. But this is quite unusual this time, isn't it, Andy?
Well, it certainly is. I mean, the first batch of war memorials were really for the First World War, so they were new ideas right the way through. And the one in Bromyard in the church here is really quite unusual because it's the complete altar in one of the side aisles.
That's right. We're looking at it now. We're in the on the south side of the church, so if you turn right, it's on the right hand side. And you're absolutely right, Andy. It's a complete altar with a reredos around behind it, which is
goodness
the,
me, I know, that's a big
I know,
word.
I hit you with a technical term early on there. So you have the altar, and then there's a wooden, I suppose it's a sort of standing area behind, really, against the wall. Along there are engraved the names of the war dead from Bromyard.
That's right. They're on about, I could count them, but I guess. I think there's five or six panels there with all the names on. And each of the panels has probably about a dozen names on. I think that probably the names are those from Bromyard and perhaps the surrounding area as well. Bromyard would have been one of the key market towns during the period of the First World War, of course, and it would have been the centre for the surrounding farming community.
The carving is spectacular, really, on the war memorial, it must be said.
Oh, it's tremendous, and the colouring of the wood as well. Looking at it, I suspect it's oak, because it's got that sort of oak colour and that durability to it as well. And then there are some gold leafing to it as well.
That's right. That's
but it certainly looks really, really impressive.
Colouring wise as well, there's a sort of a light royal blue as well that goes with it. Really picks it out well, and carved in a sort of arts and crafts style, I would say. A reading desk next to it as well, or a lectern, and I think there it says, if I look closely, placed in Bromyard Church by their comrades of the Great War, 1914 to 1918. For the memory of Bromyard's men who made the supreme sacrifice. And then that's a familiar quotation from John's Gospel: greater love hath no man than this, to lay down his life for his friends.
And I think really that says it all. But actually, I was just looking at some of the names on there, and the carving of the names is quite spectacular. And just looking, when there's a double O or an OC, those letters have been interlocked. Which I've never seen before, it certainly adds something to it.
It does. As I say, I think it is that sort of arts and crafts style, I think. Coombe is a name that jumps out with those double O's. You're absolutely right. And Locke as well, I think, with the O and the C.
Yeah.
Really, really very impressive. Of course, it's interesting. It must make remembrance quite an interesting thing to do in Bromyard, because so often we're used to there being an outdoor memorial that you might have a parade to. But I don't believe there is an outdoor memorial here in the town.
I'm not aware of one. I mean, I've taken part in the Remembrance Sunday service and parade at Bromyard, and they form up outside the Conquest Theatre. And then they parade through the town to the back door, the back gate to the churchyard, and come in, and then they do a reverse of that afterwards. But it's also quite interesting because, of course, the war memorial we're looking at is just for the First World War. And if you about turn and go towards the main door, on the left there is the Second World War Memorial, and also a tablet commemorating those that have died since the Second World War as well, including Rifleman William Aldridge, who was the the youngest casualty in Afghanistan.
That's right, and he was a former army cadet as well, wasn't he, with the Hereford and Worcester Army Cadet Force?
Yes, he was. I mean, he was on summer camp, I think, in, 2010. He then joined the regular army, joined the Rifles. Mm. Almost as soon as he trained, he deployed to Afghanistan and was killed on his first tour over there. So he was hardly 12 months out of being an army cadet, but had gone through all the training.
Yes, a tragic story there. And I know he's certainly remembered at the detachment around the corner in Kirkham Gardens. Perhaps we could take a little wander over there a moment.
If I can drag you away, Paul. I know you're looking at the architecture and checking up all the hymn books and everything.
I certainly am. And certainly, with all those names on those war memorials, plenty of stories to delve into. But we're taking a bit of a broader brush look around Bromyard today. So perhaps we'll have a little wander around to Kirkham Gardens and look at the... Because I believe you'll probably tell me a few more things about the cadet building there in Kirkham Gardens.
Well, I always have one or two things that I keep in reserve to impart that knowledge to you, Paul, you know.
Excellent. Let's have a little wander around there now.
Okay, don't slam the door, will you, on the way out. Right, okay. We're just across the road now, really, from the church, and just in Kirkham Gardens. And about 50 metres up on the right is a pretty small building, actually. Mm. But this was the drill hall. I'm not entirely certain when it was built, but it was occupied by the Herefordshire Regiment when they were formed in 1908, or shortly afterwards. Before that, there would have been the Rifle Volunteers in Bromyard. I'm not quite certain where they paraded. Often in the back room of a pub, being good military men. A pub was important
indeed
to them.
But certainly this building we're looking at the moment, it could well be a Victorian building, a late Victorian building, or early Edwardian. It's certainly a lot older than many of the surviving drill halls within the county, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is. And we've got photographs of it from, I say, just shortly after 1908, when it was the Herefordshire Regiment's drill hall, the platoon, which was based in Bromyard. For whatever reasons, Bromyard didn't get a company in the new regiment, and they were a platoon location, an outstation of Leinster, I think. Definitely Leinster, the company based in Leinster. So there would have been perhaps anything up to 40 or 50 men based here, and part of the company from Leinster, and the whole company strength would have perhaps been 120, 150 men.
And this is a building I know well as a cadet detachment. It's I've certainly visited here as a cadet force padre. Inside, downstairs is a hall where you hold your parades, and upstairs offices and a classroom and a store at the back. So quite a typical building in terms of use. Although, as you say, quite small. It looks quite narrow, sort of gable end on in the roadway, but does go back a little way.
Yeah, it does. And I wonder if perhaps at some time there may have even been a miniature range on one side. But given the length of the building, there could have been a miniature range. I mean, it's never existed in my time. So I'm speculating there. So perhaps I better stop and better get back to reality. The building here, so it's been in constant use for over 100 years. And for the certainly the Herefordshire Regiment, possibly the Rifle Volunteers, the Herefordshire Light Infantry, and now, of course, it's used for the cadets. So possibly one of the drill halls in the county which has been used permanently occupied for the longest time.
We'll have to look into that. I'm sure it certainly sounds, I think we're both doing it now. We'll get some funny looks from passers-by at the moment.
We're stood here
scratching our heads. But I think it's definitely in the running for the longest occupied.
I mean, we really ought to think of these things before we start talking, and then we could research them. But
where would the fun be in that, Andy?
We've been caught out on air again by our own thoughts. I just thinking about it, there was quite a strong Home Guard contingent in Bromyard as well. So I don't know whether they paraded here or not. They probably did, because I suspect the platoon which was based here would have been mobilised for the Second World War, So the building would have been empty. Mm-hmm. So I suspect actually that the Home Guard used it as their headquarters.
That would certainly make sense, mm. wouldn't it? I mean, the Home Guard, of course, were dispersed, you know, out and about in towns and villages all over the place. But they had their company headquarters and their platoon headquarters. Yep. A little while ago on the podcast, we went to the Rose and Crown in Tupsley, didn't we? Which was a company headquarters.
I seem to remember that pint very well.
Indeed. These walks always end with a pint. I think we might do that again today, although we've got a little bit more walking to do.
I think we have, yes. I mean, we better walk around.
I wonder whether it might be worth taking a little wander just outside the town and maybe heading up to Bromyard Downs.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
Because I think there was certainly a range up on Bromyard Downs.
Yeah, there definitely was. There was a... in fact, it was during the Rifle Volunteer Course time, and it went back to 600 metres. I think it was only two or three lanes at 600 metres.
Sounds good.
But going forward to 100 and or 200 meters, I think it was six or an eight lane range. But it was up on the downs behind the, I forgot the name of the pub.
Is it the Oak Pub?
The Oak, yes. That's it, well, yes.
Should we take a little wander up there and we'll see if we can see anything
gotta,
that remains
gotta
of
be
that.
Done, I think. Got to be done. Well, here we are now up on the downs and the wind's blowing a bit, but not too much, fortunately. And we're wandering around behind the pub, which unfortunately is closed. So and it's not just closed, you know, closing hours. I think it looks semi-permanently closed at the moment. Which is a great shame. I remember coming here on sunny evenings with the sun setting and sitting in the garden and enjoying a pint or two. It was. Let's hope that it will open again sometime.
Yeah, let's hope for happier days, indeed.
The range was subject to the Herefordshire Archaeological Organisation carried out an archaeological survey of the Rifle Volunteers firing range on Bromyard Downs, Herefordshire.
Oh, well, there we go.
About 10 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting. There's a full, probably about, a 20 or 30-page report. Mm. And they mapped out where the range was. They carried out metal detecting and found various bits and pieces. Mm. So there's quite a lot about it. I think in some ways it raises more questions than it answers. Yeah. But certainly it proves that that range was
there. Something was
definitely
here. I mean, whenever we're sort of walking around an area of land that has been used as a range, there are sometimes a few telltale signs, aren't there, if you know what you're looking for. You're looking principally for what we call the butts, a bit of raised ground designed to stop the bullets. They would hit a target and then would bury themselves into the butts behind that lane. But often a lot of the other areas...
You're getting a lot of butts in.
I am.
often the ranges were the business end where the bullets went to, where the targets were on a hill, or there was a raised sandbank there specifically to act as that bullet catcher.
That's right. But the rest of it, really, often you may have a sort of an area of flat grounds, but it'd be quite difficult. It's quite easy to miss these features in
yes,
the landscape.
Yes, it is. I mean, often the generally the firing points were at 100 metre or 100 yard distances, so 100, 200, 300, whatever. Mm. And there might be a sort of a raised bank or an earth platform where they fired from, but they could be firing over dead ground, over streams. Mm. Not quite round corners,
but they're
not always easy to detect.
No, but if you find out where the butts are, and then you get your measuring tape out,
yes,
you could then start to try and work out where those firing points are.
Yes, you can. And if you get a map which has a big enough scale, then you can often pick out these things on it.
And it certainly appears to be what the archaeological survey did. I mean, they certainly found, presumably, brasses and things like that.
Yeah, they did, and bullet heads and bits and pieces. Mm. I don't think they found any bits of uniform or anything, which you often find on the range, because the soldiers would lie down to shoot, and they would often catch buckles and buttons and things on the ground. And when they got up, they would have lost them and just dropped off, or they would be taking perhaps their pipe out of their pocket and they would pull out something else at the same time and lose it. So quite often other things are found, but it doesn't appear that they found much of that sort of stuff here.
No.
Anyway, now we're up on the downs. They're massive up here, and lots of dog walkers, lots of space up here. And, of course, the downs were important during the Second World War.
Oh, okay.
There was the Home Guard, who we've spoken lots about before. And within the Home Guard, there were the auxiliary patrols. Mm. And Bromyard had an auxiliary patrol. Coming back to your profession here, all of the patrols had biblical names.
Ah, okay.
And the one in Bromyard was called Jacob.
Mm.
A very traditional name, I believe.
There we go. And so for those people who don't know what an auxiliary patrol was, Andy?
These were stay-behind patrols. Although they were Home Guard, they really had very little to do with the Home Guard. Mm. They didn't parade with them. They were patrols of perhaps 4 to 8 men. They had a bunker, and stored in the bunker was ammunition, weapons, explosives. If there was an invasion, they would effectively hide in the bunker, and then they would come out and they would destroy key points. Mm. For example, in Ledbury, they would perhaps destroy the viaduct or the railway tunnel. Mm. In other areas, it might be reservoirs or radio masts or something like this. Mm. They also had I don't know whether they held this or whether they were going to be issued with it, but a list of people who were considered as collaborators who they would assassinate. And I've also heard that they also had a list of individuals who were so considered to be so valuable to the enemy that they were also on an assassination list. But if those lists existed, they would obviously be very, very sensitive.
Yeah, yeah.
If they still exist, then I suspect that they are subject to a government restriction order, which is not going to be lifted many years to come.
Soon. No, that sounds like the sort of thing that would have ended up on a fire, I suspect, towards the end of the war or just afterwards. So effectively, these auxiliary patrols were embryonic resistance, weren't they?
Absolutely. And I think that, I read an article recently saying that Britain set up its resistance before it was needed. Whereas in the occupied countries, certainly we know lots about France, where the resistance movement was set up, and then, but it was set up effectively after the occupation.
Yeah, yeah.
So they were in challenging times, whereas in UK, they were set up
that
prior to it.
And I know that a lot of the members of those auxiliary patrols would be local people in reserved occupations, a lot of farmers who knew and people who knew the land and could live off the land as well.
Yeah, very much so. Farmers and gamekeepers and that type of person. And up on the downs here, I'm told that their base, normally they were dug into the ground and they were probably, 20 feet by 8 feet, something like that, but buried into the ground so totally hidden, with a hidden access to it. And it was in Warren Woods, I think, which I don't know. I must have get a map and have a look, see if I can find Warren Wood. All this fresh air. I think we better head back down.
It's doing you no good at all, Andy, is it, this fresh air?
No, I think on all this talking and walking, I think it's probably time to to go in a wet air whistle,
indeed. Well, I think we often tend to head for Wye Valley Brewery establishments, and I believe the Rose and Lion, I believe?
I think known locally as the Rosie,
So maybe we'll adjourn there and perhaps explore some strange connections with the sea, which is very odd here in Bromley.
Right. Well, we will be back shortly to explain more. Well, this is much better, Paul.
This is a bit warmer, a bit less windy. Very good pint of HPA as well.
It is a good pint. And my throat has been my whistle has been duly wetted. And to carry on talking. Now, Paul left you in a little bit of a mystery about connections to the sea. And during the Second World War, most of the towns and villages throughout Britain raised money to buy or to help pay for warships. In Herefordshire, that happened. And Bromyard adopted the destroyer HMS Vivian, an old First World War V&W class destroyer. That in itself is a little bit of a mystery, because Bromyard by its size should have only got a sort of small coastal patrol vessel, but it got a destroyer. And no one quite knows why it got a destroyer.
No, there are some theories put forward, aren't they? That certainly in terms of the amount of money raised, it was a very high amount of money raised per head. And,
yeah.
And the thought was perhaps the good folk of Bromyard deserved a bigger vessel. I think Leinster only got a corvette.
Yeah, they did. I think there was probably a little bit of a rivalry between them all. In exchange for sponsoring or whatever the term was, I suppose sponsoring is the right word, the vessel, the town would be presented with a ship's plaque.
Mm.
And the ship's plaque would be quite big. It's probably about 2 foot tall and about 18 inches wide.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And it's round with the Royal Navy crown
yeah.
on the top.
Yeah.
But the one that Bromyard was presented with, no one knows where it is. And a couple of years ago, the Royal British Legion were trying to locate it together with, I think it's the National World War II Destroyers Association, which were trying to track all these down. And no one knows what's happened to it. So if anyone's listening and has seen a HMS Vivian plaque
and it's
around...
It's quite distinctive with the naval crown, and the badge of HMS Vivian is a red book with an asp, a snake going around it.
Yeah.
I forget quite. I should have looked this up, Andy, before we came out. But quite why that reason is. But a lot of these go back into sort of mythological creatures
yes,
and
they
stories.
Do. Yeah.
Dear listener, an intervention from the editing suite. Andy's father and my grandfather, Jack Taylor, would look rather remiss at us if we didn't point out that the symbol of HMS Vivian, the snake circling the book, actually refers to Vivian, who was the one-time lover of Merlin in Tennyson's Idylls of the King, who tricked King Arthur out of a book and used her wiles in lots of other ways as well. Hence the serpent surrounding the book, a picture of which will be on the website accompanying this podcast. Anyway, back to us in the pub.
So yes, that HMS Vivian plaque would be a wonderful thing to find. The bell for HMS Vivian, we know, was sold at auction in the early 1990s to a local collector.
Yes, it was, yeah.
Well, local collector.
I think it was Bristol, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, we have a family connection to
we
HMS
do,
Vivian,
indeed.
which is why we're talking. But let's get another pint before we start talking
indeed,
about
indeed.
That.
Indeed. Or that second pint goes down quite well.
I bet you're pleased I brought my wallet with me, Paul, again.
As always.
Yeah, but HMS Vivian. Now, my father served on HMS Vivian, so that's why we have a particular link to the ship and, of course, to Bromyard.
Mm.
And Dad served on Vivian for, I think almost 3 years. The V&W class destroyer, and she was on North Sea escort duties from Sheerness to Rosyth, and I think Dad did that trip escorting convoys for pretty much 3 years.
He did quite a lot of that, didn't he? And
yeah.
those V&W destroyers were they were starting to show their age a bit by that point, but they were a large class of destroyers, a good number of them, and about 15 or so were converted to an anti-aircraft use. So rather than being a general destroyer
yeah.
that was designed to combat torpedo boats, fast raiders on ships, this new WAIR class, as they were known, they were designed to provide anti-aircraft cover for convoys, as well as, of course,
yeah.
depth charges against anti-submarine duties
yeah.
and those sort of
yeah.
things as well.
Yeah. I think actually when Dad was on it, it was upgraded from a coal ship to an oiler, if I remember correctly.
Mm.
So he probably would have been in dock, I don't know, for several weeks, I suspect, at that time. And I suspect he would have got some leave during that period.
Mm.
Which, again, brings me on to another point, because I remember talking to Dad, and he said that all of the crew on board Vivian had made toys. Lots of them had carved wooden dolls, peg dolls and toys, these snappy crocodile things, had carved them for the children of Bromyard. And Dad was given leave just before Christmas, came home, and then I remember telling me he got a bus over to Bromyard to present this bag of toys to someone in Bromyard. Mm. So who knows, there may be someone in Bromyard that remembers getting these toys. Perhaps even one of these toys still exists
indeed,
somewhere in the
town. It would
town.
Be lovely to see those, wouldn't it? Because he was the ship's carpenter, of course. So actually, it was doubly appropriate that he should present these wooden toys as the ship's carpenter, but also as a Herefordshire man, because it's completely...
Just coincidence
that he ended up on HMS Vivian. I think he had another mate on the ship who was also fairly local.
Yeah, from Twinning in Tewkesbury.
But of course, as with all naval personnel, they were drawn from across the service.
And it was totally random that he actually ended up on Vivian. Now, Paul, a little test for you.
Oh, here we go.
I know you like these little quizzes. What was the other famous V&W class destroyer during the First World War, and why was it famous?
Well, HMS Vimy brought... No. Back. Okay, I'll tell you about HMS Vimy anyway then. HMS Vimy brought back the unknown soldier.
HMS Verdun did.
Oh, bums. HMS Verdun.
God, caught you out.
I knew it was named after a First World War battle. HMS Verdun indeed brought back the body of the unknown soldier, that's right, from France, who's now lying in Westminster Abbey. I've got another question for you then. Another V&W destroyer. That Prince Philip served aboard as a junior officer in the Second World War.
Oh, that's a good one.
I'll give you a clue. It doesn't begin with V.
So it must be W then. I'm pretty quick like that. No, I give up.
It was HMS Wallis.
Oh, right.
He was aboard HMS Wallis to begin with. And later on, he served in the Mediterranean on larger vessels. But he started off on HMS Wallis and was president of the V&W Destroyer Association for many years as a result. And in fact, he was once, I forget the name of the other ship, but there was another ship in the convoy again on the North Sea coast. It wasn't HMS Vivian, as far as I'm aware. But this other ship had stolen the three golden balls that hang outside a pawnbroker's shop, and they painted them black and they put them up as a trophy behind the bridge. And Prince Philip was noted these and was told that they were a new navigational device. And he was very annoyed that it wasn't HMS Wallis which was the flotilla leader that received
them.
These.
Oh,
it was a different one.
Brilliant. But of course, HMS Vivian and Dad, he was on North Sea patrol vessel patrol duties, convoy escort duties for most of the war. Mm. But at the end of the war, he went abroad for the first time ever. The Vivian was sent up to Norway when they entered into waters to tie up. Dad was stood on the deck, apparently, and it was shouted at the bridge to jump ashore to help tie the ship up. And that was, I think, the only time he ever went abroad and set foot on foreign lands.
Indeed.
for many years.
I remember him telling me that he didn't really like the look of this because he could still see German soldiers running around.
I'd forgotten that.
And the skip, Commander Blackmore, said, "Oh no, don't worry." They didn't call him Jack, did they? They called him something else.
If he called him Jack, they would have been referring to Jack Tarr as a sailor.
That's right. Don't worry, Mr. Churchill's had a word, and they won't shoot at you. And in fact, I think he did buy some jewellery for a girlfriend in Norway, and was presented a handful of silver change. And this Norwegian lady very carefully picked out all the older currency.
Yes, which had more silver
in it, which clearly she'd melt down later on.
But the Vivian's claim to fame was that it received the surrender of the minefields plans for the Skagerrak and the Kattegat, which are the two seas which are to the north of Denmark.
Yes, they're off the Danish coast.
Occupying the entrance into the Baltic. But it was reported in one of the local, the Scottish newspapers, and there were some photographs, and I think amongst sort of 30 people on the deck of HMS Vivian, all about the size of an ant, Dad was very pleased to point himself out, although he could have been any one of them.
Indeed. But a wonderful connection, Romyard and the county, because, of course, we get very bound up with the army and to a certain extent the RAF, but actually it's good to remember that there are naval links to the county as well.
Yeah, very much so. And anyway, Paul, I think probably we ought to
get
finish
out,
this one and
brave the weather again.
Go out and whatever we've got to go out for.
Indeed.
So anyway, it's been great to chat to you about Bromyard, and I think we've chatted more about Dad than Bromyard, but never mind, it's good to chat.
To as ever, there'll be plenty more material for further podcasts here and elsewhere in the county.
So it's, as we say, it's goodbye from me, and it's
goodbye from me.
Play on, Bandmaster.